We can end up being very frustrated living in two different worlds, never really finding fulfillment in either. Sometimes we live in a secular world and we discover that we feel broken, sometimes ashamed that the secular world doesn't quite match up with our sacred beliefs. And yet, there's times when we're in our sacred worship to find that our secular world invades our thoughts and our energies and vies for the attention. So we stay distracted and unfulfilled. Because living in two worlds is frustrating and we don't find peace in either one. Sometimes we live with a twisted spirit. When we live in two separate worlds, we're always trying to remember the person we are. James writes that we become like a man who looks at himself in a mirror. You look at yourself, walk away, and forget what you look like. When you're living in two worlds, one that honors and follows God and one that honors and follows self, it leaves our spirit twisted in knots over who we are, what we're doing, when and where. And sometimes we live with a broken witness, not because we foul up or continue to sin on occasion. It's because in a sacred life we live, too often in a self-righteous posture of the perfect saint, while in our secular life, we live like everybody else. Truth is, the world recognizes when people live what they believe. And from the world's perspective, it's not looking for perfection. What it's looking for is integrity. I don't know if you've captured the news of the past week. This is Glenn Weir. For those who don't know, Glenn is the Deputy Commissioner of the police force. His responsibility is to make sure our roads are safe, and he runs all the various blitzes which are going on right now if you're going to get yourself demerit points and all sorts of things. Earlier this week, he apologised because he was caught speeding in an unmarked word car in Melbourne. Apparently, he was doing 58 in a 50 zone. He thought it was a 60 zone, and I can understand that. I've been there. Because of his perfect driving record, he did not need to face a fine. And that's available to all of us. If you get caught speeding, if you've got a perfect driving record, you are allowed to apply and say, could you expunge that from my record? And they will do so. But instead of doing that, he stood up on national TV and very humbly and very sincerely apologized for setting a bad example. That takes integrity. The integrity of taking the fine. If I could magically click something into every Christian, it would be this. To understand in our life, because of what Jesus did for us, we, as followers of Jesus Christ, have been declared sacred. It's a declaration. You can't actually do anything else about it. You are sacred. We are sacred. But at the same time, we have to understand that we are a work in progress. And that often causes consternation and causes this twisted spirit. But we need to understand that's not how God views us. God views us to say, these are my sacred children. How do we bridge this great divide in our lives? We want to have success in this life. We have to begin to unify our lives under one banner, one direction, one God. Good Friday, Holy Friday, is Jesus giving us this opportunity. There's four people I'm glad I am not. They are Adam and Eve, Judas Iscariot, and Peter the Apostle. And the reason I'm glad I've never been those four people is they knew the sacred and they made it profane. Profane comes from the Greek word, which means from the base or to cross the threshold. We get our word profanity from the same root. To profane something is to take something sacred and reduce it to a common status. So something sacred is something that is opposite of that. It is something that is separated from for God. Adam and Eve had this perfect relationship with God. They walked in the garden with him. They started off and God created as good. But then we know the account and we know the temptation which was put before them, that they fell. And then sin entered the world because of the actions of Adam and Eve. And they took something which had been sacred, that sacred relationship with the living God, and they profaned it. They were cast out of the garden, but God still loved and cared for them. Judas Iscariot, we realize, spent over 3.5 years with the living Lord, and at the end of it, he betrayed him for 30 pieces of silver. He never came back to a point where he sought forgiveness for that act, although he obviously deeply regretted it, and we know he took his own life. He took a perfect relationship, something which was sacred, and he profaned it. And then we've read of Peter and his denial. He knows something perfect. He'd been chosen as the one to lead, but he still profaned that relationship. Matthew 7:6, do not give dogs what is sacred. Do not throw your pearls to pigs. If you do, they may trample upon their feet and turn and tear you into pieces. Do we understand that we are sacred if we've accepted the salvation of Jesus? Do you recognize the sacredness of God in us? It's more than your quiet time, your devotions. It's a holy, sacred thing to commune with God. So we spoke last week about the triumphant entry. And then actually what Jesus goes and does is he clears the temple. And the reason he clears the temple? Because the money changers made it hard for those who wished to come into a sacred space to do so. You've got to come in and you're meant to come in to be able to bring your sacrifice, to make yourself between you and God right again. But before you're allowed to do that, you've got to have exactly the right burden. You're not allowed to bring your bird in. You've got to have our bird. And so you've got to change the money over at an exhausted rate to then use that money, because you can't use the money which the Romans give you. You've got to use the temple money and then use the temple money to buy the correct bird, which you can then go and sacrifice. So I'm just going to make profit after profit on you. I don't care that you may be finding yourself turned away from being able to have that relationship with God through the temple, because I've made all these prerequisites of what you need to do to belong in this group. And the danger, as I said a couple of weeks ago, is that we put upon people and say, before you're allowed to know that Jesus Christ is the Lord and Savior, we've got to get you to act in certain ways first. And I said, no, that's the wrong way around. We want people to be able to belong to our community of faith so that they can be exposed to the truth of who Jesus is and believe in him. And once you believe in him, then you can become the disciple that he wants you to be. And that's a journey each and every one of us is on. Jesus became a change agent when he cleared the temple out and he said, listen, this is meant to be a place of prayer, but you've turned into a den of thieves. What's he saying? You're preventing people who are genuine wanting to become reconciled back to God through a sacrificial system, and you're stopping them. In 2 Kings, It reads, Elisha returned to Gilgal, and there was a famine in the region. While the company of the prophets was meeting with him, he said to his servant, put in a large pot and cook some stew for these prophets. One of them went out into the fields to gather herbs and found a wild vine and picked as many of its gourds as his garment could hold. And when he returned, he cut them into the pot of stew that, though no one knew they were there, the stew was poured out for the men. But as they began to eat, they cried out, man of God, there is death in the pot. And they could not eat it. Elisha said, get some flour. He put it into the pot and said, serve it to the people to eat. And there was nothing harmful in the pot. Taking something which had been profaned, made poisonous, Elisha, through the power of God, put some flour in and made that sacred again. Because of the sacrifice that Jesus brings to us, we know that Jesus is bold and heroic. What he does is he takes the profane and makes it sacred again. The walk of the cross that we've listened to is Jesus' act of love, thousands of years in the making. 3 years in the ministry to show through example that Peter was worth dying for. That Peter was worth saving, that Peter was worth restoring to his rightful place as human. So even though Peter profaned the relationship, Jesus' authority and power is still greater and could take that profanity and make it sacred again. We know that Jesus was determined and directed. In many parts in the passages of the Bible, it says, and he turned his face towards Jerusalem. Nothing stopped him from his purpose. He was always heading towards voluntarily giving his life. No one took it from him. He very clearly set this up. This was something which was going to happen. The life that he lived was sacred and sacrificial. By making the profane sacred, he builds his coming kingdom. And Peter became an example of that. He has been declared sacred. Have you ever wondered why in Acts chapter 10, Peter gets this vision? Peter became hungry and wanted something to eat, and while the meal was being prepared, he fell into a trance. He saw heaven open and something like a large sheet being let down to earth by its four corners. It contained all kinds of four-footed animals, as well as reptiles and birds, and a voice told him, get up, Peter, kill and eat. Surely not, Lord. Peter replied, I've never eaten anything impure or unclean. The voice spoke to him a second time, do not call anything impure that God has made clean. Peter came back and effectively changed the whole food system of what Jews of his time knew. And Christians took it on board, and this is why we have a completely different food system to people who maintain the Jewish faith still. Why? Because Peter had a vision. Why give the vision to Peter? Because Peter, of all of them, understood what it meant to be declared sacred again. Which leaves you and I. Did Peter go on and just live just a great, perfect life? Did he, you know, finally grasp that he'd been made sacred and then never make a mistake? No. I can point to chapter and verse where God has decided to record for all eternity Peter's biggest mess ups, even after the resurrection. But what Peter understood is what all of us need to understand is we are on a journey of discipleship. We're on a discipleship for taking from the wheat, in this example, to bread. By being declared sacred, we're saying that that wheat is acceptable before the Lord. And we are perfect in his sight. But he doesn't want to leave us just as wheat. It's more useful to be bread. And so he offers us the journey and says, if you grasp that you are sacred, And if you can get that, then I want to lead you, because you've now believed, to become my disciple, and I will transform you, and I'll transform you into something which is useful to everybody. You know, because of the sacrifice of Jesus, it means that you and I can be bold and heroic, determined and directed, sacred and sacrificial, but also releasing and restoring. I don't have this skill. Lots of other people do. They can take something which is old and battered, and they can bring it up to something which looks marvelous and new. Here's another one. Isn't it incredible what you can do? Take something and restore it. But that's what Christ does to you and I. You know, I'm sure when a person sees this image, I'd look at it and go, no, I'll go to IKEA. It's all right. But someone who's got skill looks at that. I've got a friend of mine. She does this. She's very good at it. And she goes, that's just a great bargain. I can see where that's going to be. And that's what it ends up like. It can be done with this, it can be done with cars, bikes, all sorts of things people restore. Because what they do is they say, I know what this is going to be. You and I might need to see the finished product to get it, but they don't. They've seen it straight away. When they're looking at that, they are automatically seeing this. And it is the same with Jesus Christ. That even though we are wheat, and we are sacred wheat, because the profane has been declared sacred, even though he's calling us to be bread, and we might not even see the end product yet, he does, and that's the important part. And we need to just come and trust. C.S. Lewis said, next to the Blessed Sacrament, our neighbor is the holiest thing presented to our senses. Most of us, though, are oblivious to the holiness, except at rare moments. Peter was declared sacred, even though he'd made this horrendous thing of denying Christ 3 times. I can't even imagine denying the living God. He'd gone through the period of spending 3 years with him. He'd actively said, you are the Son of God, you're the living one, you're our Messiah, you're our Savior. He'd said all these things. He'd said, I'll always die with you. And then suddenly, when push comes to shove, he messes up badly 3 times. But still, Jesus died for him, and still Jesus declared him sacred. And you know, we know about the interaction that he has with Jesus later, where Jesus restores him, but he wasn't declared sacred when Jesus restored him. He was declared sacred at the death and resurrection. And as soon as that resurrection took place, and we'll talk about that on Sunday, that was where that declaration took place. Sacred Peter. And in the same way, C.S. Lewis hits upon it and says, sacred is sitting all around you. We may have a different set of clothes sense, haircuts, ages, but we're all still sacred. I talk about restoration of taking inanimate objects, but it also happens with people. When you see plastic surgeons who have the sight to see, I can make a difference there. I can change people's lives for the better. On Good Friday, on Holy Friday, let us take some time to look around, and also possibly in the mirror, because the profane can be declared sacred. And all we need to do, just like throwing that flower into that pot of deadly soup, is to let the power of the cross, the death and resurrection of Jesus Christ, come into our life. May you be blessed to know that you have been made sacred and are declared holy unto God. Thank you.